Hey friends, it's Rich Birch from Unseminary. Happy Thursday. Hope you're having a great week. Listen, today on the podcast, we've got an issue that literally I keep running into people all across the country who are wrestling with this issue. Lean in. We've got Dennis Gingrich from Cape Christian in Cape Coral, Florida. But listen, I want to also let you know that on March 20th, 2018, we're running an event, a Q&A with me live online about my latest book, Church Growth Flywheel. This is your opportunity to go face-to-face, get your questions about the book or church growth in general answered. What I want you to do is to go to churchgrowthflywheel.com/QA. If it's before March 20th, you can register. If it's after March 20th, that's where you can see the replay. Listen, I want to help your church. Go to churchgrowthflywheel.com/QA. Now on with the episode. You're going to want to lean in. Dennis has some great learnings for all of our churches.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. My name's Rich, the host here, and I'm just so honored that you've decided to tune in. You're in for a real treat today. I was just saying before we recorded, I was at a conference recently, and it was a great conference, and it was a bunch of executive pastors, and I had four or five executive pastors unprompted list the issue that we're talking about today as an issue that they're wrestling with at their church. So I know that there's literally hundreds, maybe thousands of church listeners that are listening in today that are thinking about this issue. Today, we've got Dennis Gingrich with us. Dennis is the founding pastor of Cape Christian Church in Florida. It's a fantastic church. This is a really cool church. You should be following them. You're doing some really cool stuff. And particularly, we're going to lean in today on some succession stuff that Dennis has been learning as the founder, as he's really seen that church transition or isn't really in the middle of that transition now. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rich. It's great to be with you and looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, well, why don't you tell us a little bit about Cape Christian? Give us the Cape Christian story. I know it's hard to compress it all down, but tell us a little bit, you know, tell us a bit of the history. And if people were to arrive this weekend, what would they experience? Talk about your role, that sort of thing.
Okay, well, my wife Linda and I moved here just right about 32 years ago in a month or so to be. Mm-hmm. And then we launched the following Easter in 1987. The city was about 48,000 people then. We're approaching, I think we're 180 some now.
That's amazing.
Approaching 200,000. So, but it's been a wonderful journey at the church. There were six of us in our core team, and we've built amazing. That. We built that during that first year until we launched. And, you know, it wasn't like a lot of the launches today where you have your 200 or you better have your core or whatever. We had about 37 of us with our kids,
right.
Like 18 adults when we launched. And, you know, it was incremental growth in the first. It was, mm-hmm. it was 65 average the first year and 91 the next year and 115 the next year. And kind of like that over the years. And we were in a school for 14 years because we were piecing together 48 properties. It was a three city blocks of residential property on a major thoroughfare, mm-hmm. where another throughway was coming through, or a major road with just limited access was coming through rear nearby. And so we started buying those 48 pieces, people scattered around the world. And that took 10 years. So we ended up in a school.
Wait a second.
Years.
So the property that you ended up on was 48 pieces of land?
Yes. 48 different landowners.
Wow. How many acres in total?
It's 14 acres.
Wow.
The total is 14 acres, but it took 10 years to put it all together.
Oh my goodness.
We thought it might take four or five, and people said it couldn't be done. But that's a lot of God stories. We don't have time to
talk
about it, all the ways that, everything from somebody saying, I'll never sell to a church over my dead body. And
wow.
The guy died that next year, and his family sold it to us.
Oh, no.
So, A lot of crazy stories like that. But wow. Anyway, we were in a school for 14 years and grew to about 400, a little over 400 in the school. And we moved into our new facility then in Christmas Eve of 2000.
Right.
We immediately jumped to 600 plus. And so, over the years, I I realized I was reading a book called The Elephant in the Boardroom. I was approaching 50. I was right about 50 at the time, and and read this Elephant in the Boardroom book, the What No Church Ever Talks About. And I remember this phrase, and I was, you know, maybe 18 or so years into the church plant at that point. And I remember this phrase of one way or another, every church is going to eventually lose its pastor. Yet very few congregations preparing for that. And I begin to think, you know what? Oh, that's a sobering reality. Would I be prepared? What if I have a health emergency and I step back in leadership? Would the church survive? You know, what would that be like? And
so at when, how old were you at that point when you read
I was, I was 50.
50.
Yeah,
right?
I just approached 50. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's right at 50.
And so it was really at that point you started thinking, we maybe need to do something about this.
Well, yeah, and I started learning about church, you know, the typical life cycles of churches, and thought, well, you know, I don't want my major life work. I had pastored 7 years prior to coming and doing the church plant, so I was 32 when I started the church here. But I didn't want that to turn into some kind of maintenance-minded, declining, eventually dying kind of church. And, you know, thought of myself in my 70s and 80s, and I thought, you know, what would that be like to sit and watch my major investment of life, of everything, my time, talent, treasure, and temple, and see it no longer being on mission and if effective in its original mission. And so,
well, why don't we jump? So that's you know, a number of years ago. Why don't we jump all the way forward now? Where is the church at? And then we'll go back and backfill the story.
So we implemented a succession plan and so forth. Now we're actually in a, we had the original lead pastor I raised up from within that had been with me 5 years. And then he served another 6 years here as lead pastor. We switched my title, got rid of the senior pastor title, called it a lead pastor, and then my title became founding pastor. And the unique part of that was that I stayed on the team, stayed a part of the team, because Wes at the time, who became the successor, said, I'm 32. The church was at about 1,000 right at that. We were right at 1,000, just bumping through the 1,000 mark. And he said, I don't want to do that. I won't do this if you're leaving. And I said, well, I don't really want to leave. I envisioned being here and being a part of this. And we've figured out a way to make that happen and worked toward that. And so Wes was here another almost 6 years as lead pastor, and we doubled in that next 5-6 years to where we were, you know, averaging weekends 2,000. And then Wes is actually leading, is a part of a network of churches now, the Ivana Network of Churches, where he's doing a lot of the things with helping churches connect with their communities and impact cities and communities and so forth. And he's doing that now. But then we went outside and looked through the Vander Ploman search group. We we found Jeff, and Jeff came, and we lost a little momentum during that time of the transition. It could have been done better, I think, as Wes was exiting and so forth. You learn from those things. It was the first one. But Jeff was here 2 years and just left actually in December of this past 2017. And so, but during that time, we regained all of our momentum, got the flywheel of momentum going back again. And that was all, you know, and so then we're, you know, 2,500 or whatever. And we kind of did a slow, we actually found Corey, who's our current lead pastor, through a common mentor of the two of them, Jeff and Corey.
Oh, interesting. That's
and
cool.
And we found him that way, and there were two common mentors that they both had that neither of them had met, but they both had this common mentor who both recommended that. And so Corey kind of phased in as he was coming, and Jeff was leaving because he was only going about two and a half hours away. And so he came back a lot over a 2-month period. We kind of brought those two and did that transition really simultaneously with literally two other churches, working on the church Jeff was going to, working with the church where Corey was coming from. Right. And we kind of did that blend in that transition, and it went exceedingly well.
Wow.
And so we never lost any momentum. Huh. And so here in January, it tends to be a peak time anyway, because we do have a few snowbirds that show up here. And over the years, we're mostly a younger congregation, mm-hmm. but we have snowbirds that show up. So it tends to be a peak time anyway. But you know, now we've hitting 3,000, breaking through 3,000, broke through 3,500 a few weeks ago for the first time ever on a
not on Easter or anything like that.
Yeah, right. Not an Easter, Christmas Eve kind of thing. We've done that for years, but
yeah.
But you know, to be able to do that on a regular weekend, and I think our average last month was 2,965 for the entire month.
Wow.
Per weekend averaged out. And so this month, I think, is going to be 3,000 or a little over, because we're popping there. So that's kind of where we're currently at. The momentum has been amazing, and it's been exciting. And a lot of, you know, about 50% of the people we reach have some church background, but are church dropouts, a lot of Catholic dropouts.
De-churched kind of thing.
And about 25% are totally unchurched, don't have any church background of any sort. And we got another 25% that come from a hodgepodge of tons of different backgrounds as they move here from up north somewhere to, you know, find work, nice warm weather, all that.
Well, your part of the world is, it's like won all kinds of awards for, like, you know, best place in the country to live and all kinds of stuff like it. So that makes sense that you have a lot of that too. Now, the incredible thing, just to underline what's happened, is, you know, here you are as the founding pastor, and I know people listening track this, but I just want to underline it. You know, here you are as the founding pastor, you know, still connected to the church, but you've seen this transition, and you're, you know, in this process of handing it off, and actually your momentum is gaining. You're actually, the church is reaching more people, which is amazing. Like, that's incredible. Yep. Like, I think the thing I resonated earlier when you said, you know, hey, this is your life work, and you know, you want to take the time now to hand this off well, so that, you know, 10, 15 years from now, when you look back at it, you're like, wow, that's even stronger now than it was when I was there. That's amazing. Well, now, was it all really easy, or did you learn some lessons along the way?
Well, no, not necessarily easy at all.
Right.
But mostly smooth.
Yeah.
I mean, mostly good, but there's always challenges. Right. There's certainly challenges. I mean, you know, the first thing I had to do was I had to re-envision success. You know, that was a part of the whole thing. And that was simple as, you know, saying I want it to be thriving and going, you know, up and to the right in every way 5 years after I'm out of the lead seat.
Right.
And that has certainly happened, and so on. But the challenges were, I think, you know, I had one of my, you know, founding couples who said, you know, Wes isn't my pastor. You're my pastor. And that was one of the reasons they gave for ducking out after 25 years. And
interesting.
And so that was, you know, a little painful.
That's hard. Yeah.
And, you know, those sort of things. He had some of that that happened. Couldn't quite catch the vision of it. And, you know, we had prepared for that, though, I had implemented team teaching like 4 years prior to the actual transition in 2009 when I was 55. You know, we had the team teaching. Wes and I were doing 50% each of the weekends.
Okay,
and we agreed to do that for 1 year after the actual public part of the transition and succession. We did that 1 year after. And then after that, we actually brought another person onto the teaching team. And then Wes was doing about 60% of the weekends. And the other two of us were sharing the 40%. And then the next year, actually a third person into it. And then and that's kind of the pattern we still have through the second two successions.
Yep.
The lead person does about 60% of the weekends. And there's three others of us on the teaching team that still share the other 40%.
So now how often what does that mean for you? You know, how many times during a year is that? I'm trying to do the backwards math there.
Well, it works out right now. It works out to about every six weeks or so that I'm, you know, 6, sometimes as long as 8 weeks. That's about as long as it ever goes. But and there's times in the transitions where I've, you know, we still have a team, so you know, I may do once a month, but I don't do that now on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Now I'm on the stage more often than that for other transitions and things, and you know, the need
communion
to know
or that kind of stuff, announcements, exactly. That kind of thing.
I'm on the stage more frequently, you know, a couple times a month or. You know, he always at least once a month.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm a little more visible. I am still visible in other kinds of ways, and I teach a class and so forth. And you know, I have a lot of visibility in that way. I have plenty to do. My role has changed over the 9 years since 2009 when we did that first succession.
Yep.
And did the public. You know, we needed the person who had the original one of the founding couples. He had been a pastor for 35 years, and he was kind of doing all the pastoral care in the first 25 years of the church. And then his health was declining and so on. So I worked in pastoral care for the first couple years, getting it organized, getting a team and getting volunteers and just getting it equipped to address the needs of, at that time we were, you know, 1500 going on to 2000 people.
Yep.
And it had to be adjusted from small church mentality, that the original one had kind of designed it around.
Right.
And so, that was one of the things I did. I don't do that anymore. I still do some,
right.
I actually take off for the, you know, I take off the person, everybody wants to see the lead pastor, you know, and whoever that is, they want to see that lead pastor, but it really isn't a huge letdown when they have to be scheduled with me.
Yes.
Oh, the founding pastor. Oh, sure. I'll be with the founding pastor instead.
Yes.
You know, and so that's usually, they didn't feel they get bumped too far down the
yes.
line.
Yes. Right. No, that makes sense.
I oversee and, lead all the mission, connections, local, foreign, I'd say sometimes some weeks or about a quarter of my time is invested just in pastoring the city.
Right.
Something I felt called to 25, almost 30 years ago, felt like God nudged me about that. It opened up in ways primarily through I became the chaplain at Cape Coral Police Department and been the lead chaplain for, you know, 22 years now. And so I pastor city leaders. I pastor business leaders all across the city who aren't directly connected to our church. I've been here longer than any other pastor in town.
Right.
So that's a natural. Plus, I've invested a lot of time in them. So that there's sometimes a fourth of my week might be pastoring the city instead of church. And that's
interesting.
And that's blessed by our, you know, our team.
Yes.
They know that's a part of my role.
Yeah. They see that as a valuable asset for sure.
Yes. That's a part of my role. And that's part of what I do. Hmm. And I work with the high capacity leaders in terms of generosity and so forth. With that, I'm real intentional about pastoring those folks.
Yep.
And working in that. So those are some of the things that I do at a given week as a part of the team. And so we structured and restructured our bylaws and everything originally that two of us pastors would be on the church board. So I still serve on the church board. I'm still part of our management team. Along with the lead pastor. Of others that he's chosen, so I'm still very involved in the leadership. But my role is I love my role of being, you know, our lead pastor's biggest cheerleader.
Yeah,
that's what I go for. I want to be the biggest cheerleader of our lead pastor, and make sure everybody knows that I'm their cheerleader.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because one of the things I've noticed from afar, just kind of following you and following the story here a little bit, has been. You are definitely very vocal around that. You do a great job. I think cheerleading and, you know, I can see that from afar as someone, you know, they're which I think is amazing. Let's kind of look under the hood of that a little bit. I think there may be leaders who are listening in who are saying, man, I don't know that, particularly as a founding pastor, which, you know, just no one else will ever have the story of you and those 6 people, the 37 people, the 18 kids. No one else will ever have that story. That's unique to you and your wife. And, you know, there's got to be, now maybe you're just superhuman, you know, you're just are a fully redeemed, you know, fully, you know, everything is just amazing on the, your internal emotional life. But I would think there's a lot of leaders who are listening and saying, man, I'm just not sure I could do that. Even if I think the person's amazing, there's got to be internal ego issues that come to the surface. How are you managing those? And then maybe the reverse, on the other side of the equation, how are, you know, how is the lead pastor now managing having the guy who founded the thing around, you know, like what, how does that look like? Cause I think there would be people who are thinking about transitioning who are like, I just don't know. How does that work? So maybe give us some insight into some of those issues.
Well, yeah, it's challenging at times and the original and the two following successions, from folks, you know, pastors who came from the outside and joined our team, and now we're lead pastors. You know, for Wes and I originally, we said we committed ourselves to open communication, to clearly come to each other if there was a foul in any kind of way. And we had to do that at the beginning. Yes. I remember one time Wes came to me and said, you know, I was showing somebody around the office and I have no idea. It was just a habit for years, you know. Oh, here's Wes. He's one of my associates. And I just went on and I just, you know, introduced him to people around the office and so forth. And later he came to me and said, was that intentional that you said I'm an associate? You know, he was now the lead pastor. And, you know, so it was a foul.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, it was unintentional on my part, but I had to, you know, we had to correct that. And, yep. And I realized, wow, I really need to pay attention.
Yep.
You know, and there were little times along the way. I remember my, you know, we did a couple of years, 2-3 years after the first succession, I think it was about 2011 or 12. We did an annual report, you know, this nice, beautiful brochure, multi-page brochure and the graphs and, you know, pictures and all the great stuff. And my wife looked through it and she was just a bit emotional. She said, there's not a single picture of you in here and you're not mentioned in here. She said, does that bother you? Well, I actually hadn't thought about it until she mentioned it. You know, so there's little things like that along the way. You have to deal with that. And, you know, what's the purpose here? Mm-hmm. And to me, it really comes back to what I learned. I heard John Maxwell say it back in one of the first years I started here 30 some years ago about level 5 leadership. And then, you know, when Jim Collins came out with the book Good to Great and saw that as one of the key differentiations with the great companies was that they had level 5 leadership and the level 5 leaders actually had a fierce humility as well as a persevering kind of a heart, but they ultimately cared more about the well-being of the organization than they did about their own selves and their own egos. And I've been trying for a long time to be a level 5 leader.
Yes.
That's a part of it. Is that you figure out the way of Jesus in Philippians chapter 2, and he humbled himself and took down where, you know, leadership comes with being willing to step down too and step back, and it's best for the organization.
Yeah.
So therefore I'll be okay with that.
Right.
And so you deal with it.
Right.
For me, it's, you know, it's that inner stuff that you work on.
Right.
It's the inner stuff that you allow God to transform you on the inside, you know, in the quiet, you work on those things.
Yes. And I wonder if you could talk us through the thing that I've been impressed with is, you know, just even through this process, you just seem to have really taken a level of intentionality in the way you've communicated and kind of rolled this out. I wonder if you could kind of give us, and there's a lot here, you know, we could spend an hour kind of pulling it apart, but even at a high level, how did you begin this process? What is the kind of, you know, communication rollout look like? You know, how did you even start this conversation internally? Because I can imagine there were the thing that I'm trying to put myself in the mind of the leaders who are leading with you, where the we all know that stability is important in churches, and that having leaders that are committed, you know, that's a piece of what, you know, makes churches grow over the long haul. You know, it's just the reality of it is that churches that that grow and have impact have had leaders that are there for a long time, and so even just introducing the idea, I would imagine, would create some trepidation. So how did you do that? How did you kind of intentionally communicate?
Well, yeah, it was very intentional. I just started discussing, this is clear back, as I said, when I was 50, which, you know, was at a time, even a little bit before that, I started thinking it. I read Bob Buford's book, Halftime, back when I was 48.
Yep.
I read it when I was 48. And it got me thinking about, you know, I felt like every part of my life was significant and successful, both. And then I got introduced to one of Bob Buford's successors that had been mentored by Bob Buford was Lloyd Reeb. Mm-hmm. And we had a mutual friend, and the mutual friend introduced me to him when he was here in our area. And I shared with him my heart, my vision of what I had in mind. And he really became my informal coach over the next years. I had him in a few times, and every time he was in town, we met and
right.
a few phone calls and so forth. And I read his book, Success to Significance, mm-hmm. and led some people through it. So that was a part of my own intentionality of my second half. What did I mm-hmm. want that to look like? Mm-hmm. I didn't want to change careers, that kind right. of thing, as a lot of business leaders might do as a part of it.
Yep.
But I began to communicate. I have my own, and Lloyd helped me with this term. Mm-hmm. I have a group of pastors,
yep.
Local pastors that I've been meeting with for 22 years every Monday.
That's fantastic.
We've been, and I call them my personal board of directors. That's
right.
Lloyd got that term for me.
Yeah.
They're my personal board of directors.
Yeah.
And then I talked about it with our church board. I actually bought the book, The Elephant in the Boardroom, for all of our board members and asked them to
right.
read it.
Right. Right. Very good.
And that was a part of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of having an emergency plan was mm-hmm. one of the pieces of that. And mm-hmm. then having a long-term plan. And so, and of course, had those conversations with Wes, who was on my team. Mm-hmm. He was a part of our team for, you know, he was in his late 20s at the time. We talked, I mean, this process went on for about 5 years behind the scenes.
Right.
And Wes and I having these conversations, and I knew he was called to be a lead pastor. And then when we actually rolled it out, mm-hmm. it was, you know, then it was very specific order of communication, mm-hmm. Very specific. And he and I met with each staff member individually at the beginning of 2009 when we were ready to do this. We had made the decision back mm-hmm. and our board signed off on everything. Back in late 2008, we mm-hmm. We had a timeline, rolled it out in January, individual staff members. I invited, one of the things we did was we invited the top 100 influencers, tried to identify who were the mm-hmm. leaders, financial leaders, ministry leaders, people that had been there a long time who were just informal,
yep.
influential leaders,
yep.
Just by their... who had been there. We invited them in groups of 25 to our home.
Mm.
And so we got four different groups
yeah.
To that top 100. And we invited them, and I shared my heart, the idea. Wes was there. He shared his heart mm-hmm. and what his plans were. And we had amazing buy-in from those top 100.
Hmm.
I didn't want them to hear it in a congregational announcement,
right.
Some kind of a letter or something. And then the public rollout of that part, after we did that staff was in January of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Those meetings were all held in February into the first week of March. And then mid-March of 2009, Wes had been licensed but never ordained. So we had a public ordination.
Okay.
But we announced ahead of time via a letter to join us for this wonderful celebration.
Right.
We cast vision in that and did it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the way it worked out, and it was best way I could think of to do it. And it really worked well.
That's fantastic. You know, I think the thing I love about that is it sounds like by the time you went public, it really was the worst kept secret, which is kind of what you want, mm-hmm. right? Like you
yes.
don't want anyone, you want everyone to feel like they're getting in on the ground floor, that they heard about it ahead of time, that, you know, you don't want anybody to be surprised. You want a chance, mm-hmm. you know, for people to get their questions answered, a chance to, you know, to hear it multiple times, you know, and then to obviously reiterate, you know, kind of what the future looks like. I wonder if you could, there's probably two kinds of people that are listening in that I'm wondering if you could address. So the first would be, say, a senior pastor who is late 40s, early 50s, and this idea has been floating around in the back of their head, and they're not sure about mm-hmm. what first steps to take. They're not sure, You know, it's funny. I've had this conversation with, you know, lead pastors that I've served with. And, you know, the joke I've made as they're in their 40s is like, now is the time for us to start the succession conversation. We can't wait till you're 60 to do that. We have to start it now, particularly founders who intend to be around for a long time. So the first would be that someone who's, you know, at that. And then what about on the other side? Let's say maybe it's a senior leader, it's a board member, it's an executive pastor who they think they should be having the conversation as a church, and the lead person is just not in for it or just doesn't seem to be interested. Mm-hmm. So those two groups of people, what would you say to them?
Well, it is. I mean, that book's a little dated now, The Elephant in the Boardroom and so forth. And there are some good, a couple of books that have come out since. Mm-hmm. William Vanderploman and Warren Bird did that, and Warren had visited here and said, "Hey, I want you to write that story." That was in 2012.
Yep.
He was here on vacation and mm-hmm. popped into the church, and so I wrote the story for him, and then mm-hmm. they included it in the book as yep. one of the examples. Later, in, I think when it came out in 2015, mm-hmm. Tom Mullins has just more recently written Passing the Leadership Baton over at Christ Fellowship over across the state from us, mm-hmm. West Palm, mm-hmm. and with his son Todd. And mm-hmm. Or did I get those two reversed? Yes, Tom and Todd.
Yes. Yeah.
that's a very helpful book. And so is Next. Next gives a lot of great examples.
Yep.
I would introduce reading materials to people. Others have done it. There's a lot of different ways to do it. I don't know that the only way is for the lead pastor to stay.
Yep.
I don't say that's the only way. That's the uniqueness that we designed ours, and it mm-hmm. is work. Mm-hmm. Certainly is. It has to be out there when we have had the two successions since. That was a major part of the conversation with the new ones coming in, that I was still here. And that was a huge, they both have told me that was a huge deal once in the interview process.
Right.
Was, did they think they could get along with me? How would it work with me being here?
Right.
What would that be like? Would I micromanage what I do? You know, those kind of things. Just the honesty of the conversation, and the sooner the better.
Yep.
You know, Willow Creek's done a good job of, mm-hmm. I think they started theirs. I remember Bill, about 6 years out mm-hmm. Six, 7 years out, that conversation that was going on and was happening. I don't think these are quick decisions. They're not quick conversations. I think they're conversations, the sooner the better you start them. You lots of prayer and lots of openness.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
It's got to take a lot of a lot of transparency, a lot of openness, mm-hmm. and so on. So I've started a blog to try to help people.
Yeah, why don't you tell us about that?
I just launched it a few weeks ago, and I've got a couple posts, and I'm going to be posting a couple times a month. And mm-hmm. SuccessfulSuccessions.com is what it is, and I'm just going to tell our story and kind of gather resources. I've got a resource page mm-hmm. on there, mm-hmm. A few interviews and podcasts that you've done with mm-hmm. folks or mm-hmm. Links on there, mm-hmm. Some of the books. They're available. Trying to get a place where there's a kind of a resource for this kind of thing.
Yep.
There's a few little things happening. I think Lifeway did one and a little conference mm-hmm. regarding this, and Leadership Network did one a few years ago, and Linda and I did our story mm-hmm. on there to open that up, it was. You know, I think it's a conversation that's going to happen.
Yes.
And it should be one that is happening with a lot of open conversation, if plenty of lead time.
Yeah.
That's so important.
I just want to underline that. A part of why I wanted to have Dennis on is I think that there's leaders today that really should just reach out to Dennis and say, hey, let's grab a phone call. I don't know if you're open to that. But, you know, because I think there are... we've had a number of conversations like this on the podcast. Like you've said, you know, we've had Heather Larson on from Willow. We had, you know, Carrie and From Kinexus and Jeff Brody, and through their transition and a bunch of them, Chris Bonham, we've had a bunch of these. Now, the interesting thing about them is each of those is very different. You know, they all look a little different. They have a different feel to them, a different sense. But the thing I think you're offering, which I think is really good, is, hey, kind of a bit of a gathering place, a place to have a conversation around this issue. So I would, again, that website is successfulsuccessions.com, right? Is where people can go to find out more information.
People can subscribe to, so each new post gets, it'll come in their email when it's done. So,
and I'm looking forward to your book. When does your book come out? That's the question. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, people. I'm not launching
at this point. I'm still full time at the church.
Exactly. So. You still got a thing to do.
I'm still full time here. So, but I've helped a couple of organizations, a couple of churches. I just over the last year worked with a missions ministry. They actually do coaching of ministries, and the founder wanted to stay a part of the organization, but not be the executive director any longer. And she wanted it to go to the next level. So I worked with their board over the last year, meetings with their board, their transition team, and with her, a lot of time with her, and the new person that came in about 6 months ago. And I've continued. Now we just talk via Skype because they do all of their work around the world via Skype. And so we talk via Skype, and now we've just once every couple months now. How's it going? What are things happening? How's it going? And since they're professional coaches, we traded some. We did a little bartering, and it's one of the payments that I got was that I'm being coached by an expert coach on just some of my things, because I was kind of getting bogged down and stuck on a couple of things that I really wanted to move forward on. So she helped me on that too.
That's cool. Well, the cool thing about that, and we said this again in other contexts on the show, it seems like it's the kind of thing that for whatever reason, church leaders don't talk about publicly, but churches that are thriving and prevailing usually have a layer of coaches behind the scenes that are helping them through these key transitions. And I would say Dennis is a good example of the kind of person that's going to help you have a shortcut in this conversation, that because he's been through it, because he's living it, he's in the midst of it, that experience is going to help you as you think about this transition. And it's critically important. This is not... this is not something you want to kind of whiff. And particularly, I'd say if you're a founder, I would think you would be particularly, you would speak with particularly clearly to a founding pastor around all of those issues. Because I think there is my sense, I'm not a founding pastor, but my sense is that has a layer of complexity, emotional complexity, that's different than just even a long-term pastor. If you were a pastor at your church for 20 years, you're there, that has a certain amount of thing. But when you're the founding pastor, I think that has its own layer of complexity to it.
Oh, it does, Rich. Let me tell you one quick story. My wife is a part of this whole thing, and she was so much involved in, never on staff, but she's a labor and delivery nurse, and she's always had that part of her life on a part-time basis, but she's been highly involved and committed to so many parts of it. And, when I came home, and we had this conversation all along, but when I actually came home with the day that I said, I have a timeline, and I said, here's the timeline that I wrote that out today, and I talked with Wes about it, and I'm going to take it to our board, as we have continued this. She broke into tears. She started bawling, but she said, Dennis, she says, this is our baby. This is our baby. Yeah. And she,
get that, right?
Something emotionally, that
shifted.
Happened. It shifted. But my analogy was quickly, we have three children. They're all adults now, from their early 40s down to mid 30s. But I said, and Chad's our oldest. And I said, Chad's an adult. And he's got kids of his own. And, he's been out of the house they've been married almost 19, 20 years. Yep. I said, sometimes you still call him your baby, and that's okay. And you do that, but you never treat him like a baby.
Right.
You treat him like an adult.
Yep.
And so that's the way it's going to be with Cape Christian.
That's good.
It is a new phase.
Yep.
It'll always be our baby.
Yep.
It'll always be our baby.
Absolutely.
We did birth it.
Yep.
But we don't relate to it like it's our baby. We relate to it like an adult.
Yeah.
And so that's a whole different way. And her tears, she smiled, her tears stopped, and she said, yeah, yeah, we can do that. We can easily do that. We know how to do that. We do that. We do the adult parenting of adults well.
Yeah.
In fact, we've done seminars on how to parent adults because she does a parenting on purpose class for all the new ones coming in, wanting to dedicate their children and everything. She wrote that and has done it. That's a passion of hers as a labor and delivery nurse, is parenting. It totally resonated with her, that parenting thing. And so I share that with people because, yes, there's the emotional piece of that. And, you know, it hit her right at that moment.
That's
and,
very good.
This was a change coming.
Well, that's good. Is there anything else you want to share before we move on with the rest of the episode?
No, I think you know, we've covered a lot of the good stuff. I really love my role now. You know, the first couple, I will say, Rich, the first couple years, were like, how does this work? How does this fit? And this kind of maybe just backtrack just a second. This is a little bit of the, you know, when do I speak up? When do I shut up as the lead person? And I remember this was one of the other areas about 18 months to 24 months into it. In that time period, Wes came to me. He was the first successor. He came to me and said, Dennis, he said, I feel like sometimes in meetings and things you've checked out. I wish you would share a little bit more and speak up a little bit more and give your input. And I evaluated that and we talked about that. And I said, well, I guess I haven't quite known what that balance and tension should be of when I should speak up and when I should shut up. And so he was asking me to speak up and that I had done too far on the side of shutting up. And so he was asking me to speak up. He wanted me to speak into, you know, management team, leadership team things more. And I also realized at that time I was really tired and, I was tired. And it was in that time when in that next year, we applied for the Lilly grant, the Lilly Foundation grant for the National Clergy Renewal Program. And we got a fully funded sabbatical then in 2014. I mean, we did that in 2013 and applied for it, did it in 2014. And I realized then I really was tired after at that time, 28 years here. And so it was a combination of being aware of what he wanted me to do and needed me to do as the lead pastor. And it helped me to gauge kind of what was important for him and when, and I've had to do that with the two following successors too. And I invite them to say, if I'm speaking up too much here, you know, let me know. But, but if you want me to say something or speak up more, you want my influence and my support behind something, to reinforce it, let me know, let me know. Let's get this right. And so I've done that with the two successors and it's gone really well. It's better because now I know I learned from the first time through that I tended to err on shutting up too much. Went that way.
This is the Unseminary Podcast. Stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Well, we're going to jump into the lightning round, that part of the episode where we ask similar questions of everyone that's on the show. Super honored to have Dennis Gingrich with us today from Cape Christian in Cape Coral, Florida. Fantastic story. It's been fascinating today to hear more. Dennis, what is an online resource that you're using these days to help you in your ministry?
Online resources. I follow a lot of blogs and various things like that. Yep. I use Evernote every single day.
Perfect.
I'm always writing notes, quotes, potential blog ideas. Those are the main things I use it for. Of course, I use iCal and Google Calendar for coordinating calendars. And my wife and I staying in the same tune and knowing where, you know, what our schedules are and things like exactly. that. Simple things like that.
Yeah, it's good. What's a book you've read in the last, maybe 6 months to a year that shaped your thinking in ministry?
Oh, I love Sam Chan's blog. And it's the first time I've read one of his books. I got his Bigger, Faster Leadership book. And just that whole idea of systems and structures determine your size and speed of an organization. Mm-hmm. That's a great book. I'm loving that. I did read Tom Mullen's book, Passing the Leadership Baton, when it came out in the last 6 months. That's an excellent one. I wanted to be able to know if I could, you know, recommend it. I'd heard Tom's story way back before he did the transition, and him talking about that. And I just wanted to kind of see how they played theirs out. And it's a great book for that. I just ordered your book too.
Oh, the latest
Flywheel too.
Church Growth Flywheel. That's a plug in. I didn't even ask you for that. That's nice. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, who would you want to get that with and why?
Oh, there's a lot of people, but there's three people I could spend 5 minutes with each one. And it'd be a thank you. It'd be a thank you.
Right.
Because I look back and I came out of seminary and I didn't learn anything about leadership. I wasn't taught anything about leadership.
Yep.
And when I became a church planter, I was introduced to John Maxwell. I heard him in the first couple of months. And I heard this guy named Richard Warren that had started this church in Southern California just a couple, two or three years before.
Right.
And I think it was maybe 6 years old. And he wasn't talking about purpose-driven life or purpose-driven church or any of those things in those days. But he said something to something done by Fuller on how to plant a church. And then I went to the follow up, how to break 100 barrier, how to break 200 barrier and so on. But I heard a couple of those guys speak and Rick talked about how to preach to the unchurched, and it so impacted my preaching from what I learned in seminary.
Yes.
I still have my notes for this day. I think there were like 8 things that he talked about. And so I'd like to thank you.
Totally.
You know, just one of those things that I've done that via email, but I'd love to thank him in person. Thank John Maxwell. I read all of his books in the early years. I heard him speak so many times, but he set me on a leadership learning journey. Absolutely. That really helped me. And then in the early 90s, I went to Willow Creek for the first time and learned from Bill Hybels and so many things. I would say, saying thank you to those guys who helped to shape some of those early pioneers in leadership in the modern church that impacted me 30 years ago.
Yep.
I'm very grateful. I've learned from a lot of the younger leaders today too. And I'm, you know, I learned from John Maxwell. You'd be a lifelong learner. And I'm 64 now, but I love to learn. I love to learn. I can always learn. I always got something. I never want to stop learning.
Absolutely. No, I know. I can imagine in your personal life, you know, I'd love to know what, you know, you're kind of doing for fun. One of the things that, you know, Vanderblumen and Bird talk about in Next is this idea of, you know, there's a lot of pastors who their entire life rotates around the church and actually helping pastors that are transitioning look for things outside of just the leadership of the local church. And I can tell from afar that you have a few things that are real passion points for you. What are those things? What are you doing for fun outside of church?
Well, Linda and I love hanging out. We've been married 43 years. I love, you know, our three kids, 4 grandkids, soon to be 5.
Nice.
And I love time with them as well. But I've loved photography for years, and so the last 10-15 years, I've ramped it up a little bit with more of an interest. One of the things I did at my sabbatical is I did a 5-day nature photography workshop with a professional. Five of us spent 5 days with him in Glacier National Park,
and that really
helped me. And now my hobby has become a self-supporting hobby. And so I sell to a lot of the local tourism promoters and chambers of commerce and advertising for our city. So I love it when I walk in an airport and I see my work in an airport or open up a magazine and see some of my work behind an advertisement or that sort of thing. It's one of the fun things I do.
Right.
GingrichPhotoArt.com. So, yeah. Cool. Anyway, my wife and I love to travel. We've been taking groups to Israel for 20 years and Greece and Footsteps of Paul. We're doing a new one called Footsteps of Radical Church Leaders to Germany and Switzerland. And going to be, you know, some of the Martin Luther things, but also some of the early Anabaptist leaders in Switzerland, where our roots come from. Mm-hmm. And we did that in our sabbatical in 2014, spent 6 weeks there. So we're leading some groups. We do one a year. We lead one a year. And And that's a fun thing we do. We get joy out of that. And
that's really just cool. That's really cool. That sounds great. Yeah, we didn't even get into the Anabaptist thing, which we need to at some point talk about that. It seems like I wonder how much that approach to faith is helping your transition. But that's a whole other conversation we can leave for another time. But Dennis, I really appreciate being on the show today. If people, again, want to get in touch with the church, how can they do that or get in touch with what you're talking about, with the successful transitions and all that?
Well, our church website is capechristian.com. It's just Cape for Cape Coral, but it's just capechristian.com. Mm-hmm. SuccessfulSuccessions.com is what I'm using for, and it's just a brand new. I just launched it here this past in January, about six, 7 weeks ago, and got a couple posts on there, got some resources already on there, and got some more posts coming up soon. And they can contact me always through there. Great. There's a place to email me or whatever.
Great. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
It's great. Great to talk with you, Rich.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com, and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch, or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.